Welcome to this meeting of the South Australian Press Club. My name is Robert Main and I'm standing in for our President Don Riddell, who's in business in Sydney. Those of you who've noticed that he's been absent quite a bit and that our committee members have been standing in for him, I should explain that Don is doing a lot of work for a large company, a lot of writing work. He locks himself up in a room in Sydney and they put him up over there for a few weeks at a time, and he apparently turns technical details into English for them, and I think there's no one better qualified to do it. So Don apologises for not being with you. I am with you. First of all, Minister Laidlaw, Diana Laidlaw, our guest speaker, Donald MacDonald, fellow members and, of course, guests, I bid you a very warm welcome. There's a little bit of administrative business just to move out of the way first before we go, but please start on your lunch as soon as it's delivered, and we'll press on in the usual way. And that will mean eating now, and at 1 o'clock, Sue will come up here, and then I will introduce our guest speaker, who will speak for whatever he wants to speak for, and then after we do that we will have media questions and others if we have time. We'll endeavour to finish at the normal time of 2 o'clock. Now the business I mentioned is that, oh by the way, weren't the opera singers out the front great? I thought they were really fantastic, weren't they? I thought there was a great small bite, a very small bite of a very large opera. I wondered when I came up the stairs why the piano tuner was hard at work. Now I know. We had earlier on today our annual general meeting in accordance with the normal principles of running a club like this. I'll just report briefly to you on what business we conducted. Our annual accounts were approved, and our auditor, Colin Dunsford, from a partner in Arthur Anderson, has approved them. I'm pleased to say we are in the black. We'll report more to you in detail at a later date. We have re-elected a couple of committee members, namely Chris Willis, the news director of Seven, and myself. We resigned and were re-elected. We have also we appointed, on your behalf, and we've now elected Grant Heading, who's here with today, the news director of Ten, Cheryl Nixon, the bureau chief of AAP, Steve Speziale of ADDN, Nicole Hark of 5AA, and I welcome them all on board as committee members. I would like to thank the committee for the very good work they've put in during the year. Those of you who have been here before have known the high calibre of speakers that we've had, and indeed the last speaker, Andy the astronaut, drew a record attendance of about 450. I'll just tell you a funny story about that. I couldn't be there, although I believe it was a great meeting, because I was in Melbourne at 8 o'clock on that Friday morning. The mobile phone went off in my hotel room and I picked it up and said hello, and this voice said, "Is that Robert May?" I said, "Yes." He said, "It's Andrew Thomas here. Are we still having lunch today?" And I thought, "Who the bloody hell is this?" We worked it out in the end. Even better, I had a call. We were organising that from Lynn from the Johnson Space Flight Centre in Dallas, Texas. And she said, "Mr. Main," she said, "Astronaut Thomas is coming to your club. What should he wear?" I said, "Well, he's space suit, of course. What else?" Okay, I'd like to thank Colin Dunsford, our auditor, and in particular Jim Mattock, our honorary treasurer, who've done a great job in keeping us in the black. The only other piece of business of any significance at the moment is to announce that our next speaker, if you'd like to make a note in your diaries, is on Tuesday, December the 8th, and it's Greg Chappell, the coach of the Redbacks. I'll be back at 1 o'clock.
On behalf of my colleagues at the South Australian Press Club and on the committee, it is my pleasure to acknowledge Telstra as a corporate supporter of Adelaide's Premier Lunch Forum. Would you thank them, please? We sincerely thank Telstra and we welcome their representatives here today. Many thanks also to Qantas for their corporate support when we asked them for airfares. And we also thank Orlando Wyndham for their assistance with the wine sponsorship. And today, in case you haven't noticed, you are drinking Orlando Trilogy Cuvée Brut. We also have Russet Ridge Coonawarra Cabernet Shiraz Merlot and Russet Ridge Coonawarra Chardonnay. SA Brewing again have provided Southwark Premium and, for your enjoyment today, Southwark Black Ale. If you would like to receive notification of the Press Club lunches, just speak to Merle out there at the front desk and she'll put you on our mailing list. We'd love to have you permanently on the list. Or speak to any one of the Press Club committee, myself or any one of the news directors and editors of the various media outlets. Now, the South Australian Press Club is non-profit, and to ensure that our treasurer, Jim Mattock, keeps smiling and sleeps well at night, we have raffle tickets on the table. They are $2 each, or 3 for $5. There you go. Now let me tell you today what you could win. If you've noticed the little notice I put on the table, it has changed a little bit. The opera tickets have changed. Thanks to the South Australian, the State Opera of South Australia, we have 2A reserve tickets instead of the Mikado, which is on your table. It's to the exciting De Fledermausse. It's for a choice of 3 nights in the May season. We also have a $50 voucher from the Rock Lobster Cafe in Gouge Street, which specialises in that nice southern rock lobster and other exotic seafood. We have the $50 voucher from Rigoni's Bistro in Lee Street, so you can enjoy some wonderful traditional and modern Italian cuisine. A Telstra gold pen and pencil set, 3 bottles of wine, courtesy of the Press Club, and a couple of cartons of Southwark Old Stout from SA Brewing. So that's what you can win today. Please pop your money in the envelope. As I said, $2 each or 3 for $5. Now, as a courtesy to our guest speaker, it's time to turn off your mobile phone, so please do that for us. To formally introduce our guest speaker, please welcome back the Adelaide correspondent for The Bulletin, member of the South Australian Press Club, Robert Main. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sue. You do a great job for us, and we really appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure to welcome our guest speaker today because, in my view, he is truly a man for all seasons. Donald MacDonald was born in Sydney, my own hometown. He was educated at Fort Street High School, Boys High School. Then he went to the University of New South Wales, where he did a Bachelor of Commerce. He has, of course, been the chairman of the ABC since 1996, and although he's going to talk about the ring cycle to us principally today, he has told me that he would welcome any questions about his other commitments, including the ABC. He's here as chairman of the State Opera Ring Corporation, a position which he's held since last year. He's also, I was very interested to note, when I was doing a little bit of research, a member of the board of the Welsh National Opera in Cardiff, a post he's held since last year also. He's been a member of SOCOG, the Olympic Games organising committee. Last Friday, I was lucky enough to be in a helicopter and do a bit of a tour of the site at Homebush Bay, and I tell you what, it's really impressive. It's coming along at a great rate. He's also a director of the Sydney 2000 bid, the successful bid. He was the director of the Australian Tourist Commission between 1993 and 1996. He was general manager of the Australian Opera from 87 to 96. He lists his recreations, and how he does it I don't know, as reading and swimming, presumably not together, and he was created a member of the Order of Australia in 1991. I would like you to welcome our guest speaker to the SA Press Club today, Donald MacDonald.
Thank you, Robert. As I came into the hotel this afternoon, I thought I was probably, for my own benefit, about 4 hours late, because I noted that had I been here at 8 a.m, I could have attended in room number one, just across the hall, a session on managing anger and rudeness. I don't know who the organisers were, but perhaps they can be prevailed upon to repeat the session on another occasion. You all know, of course, that there's absolutely no institutional bias within the ABC. But I am going to declare publicly that I am utterly biased about the South Australian Ring Corporation and its extraordinary activity this year. Actually, as I look around the room, it seems to me the room is filled with people who know infinitely more about the ring in general and this cycle in particular than I do, but perhaps for them it's a bit like the pleasure of going to the circus and just seeing how long it takes him to fall off the high wire. For those of you who know absolutely nothing about it, and can there be anybody in Adelaide who doesn't, the ring cycles, the three of them that have been presented here, start on November the 18th and run through till December the 12th. And they begin, in other words, next Wednesday. This is quite literally a huge and immensely important event in Australia's cultural history. The ring cycle was first performed in 1876 in its complete form at Bayreuth in the specially built theatre. 1876 sounds a long time ago if you say it quickly, but it is, for instance, significantly less than twice the age of the ABC. It's almost exactly only twice my age. So in a cultural sense, it is but yesterday. It is astonishing to think, though, that this is... Well, it is the second. I've made many speeches in which I said it was the first, and then they finally told me to stop saying that because it wasn't true. But it's, as far as any of us in this room are concerned, it's the first complete stage ring cycle in Australia. But it was done in 1913, just once, by a visiting German company who then had to get out of town. But it was astounding to think. Just think, already in 1913, somebody was touring this monumental work. In other words, its impact on the world was stupendous from the outset. Everybody just about knows that it's made up of four operas. I'm mentioning that only because the chap who drives me here in Adelaide and doesn't know a lot about these things, he's a Mason, but he has absorbed the statistic, which has been repeated a great deal on the media, variously, that this runs for 15 and a half, 16 or 16 and a half hours. But nevertheless, he has absorbed the fact that it runs for a lot of hours, about 16. And he said, you must get really tired. And I realised that he thought that it was yet another of the great Adelaide long-term presentations. I mean, you've had them in quarries and everywhere else. And so I was able to explain to him that it was over four evenings, and in fact there were whole days off. And he was very heartened by that. And anyway, just to remind any of you who don't know, it's Rheingold, Valkyrie, Siegfried and Goethe Dämmerung, which is roughly translated as The Twilight of the Gods. Now, what is it about? You actually should have been listening to ABC Classic FM this morning, because they I didn't know this, but I've been told this by one of the guests who's here today, that they happily, once again, and I did tell them some months ago to dig it out of the record library, so I'm glad they played it today, Anna Russell's fantastic version of The Ring Cycle, which is one of the great comic acts, and I'm thrilled that I actually saw her do it live many years ago in the Sydney Town Hall. Well, if you actually want to know what The Ring... Those of you who are... That table there, those of you who are serious students of The Ring down there, in order to find out about The Ring, you acquire a book which is published by Wakefield Press, and it's by Peter Bassett, who's here today, and it's called A Ring for the Millennium. And this is a terrific book. It is a wonderful introduction. It is lucid, it's light of touch, it's fleet of foot, it's all the things that a book should be for people who really want to know about something. Now, I'm going to quote from Peter's introduction about The Ring, because I think just in these few sentences he gives us a marvellous description of what it's about. He says, it is a drama of ideas. It belongs to no particular period and can be applied to a variety of social and political circumstances. It uses Germanic and Norse mythology to present symbolically the corruption of human society dominated by a lust for power. The mythological narrative draws on archetypes that are recognisable in most cultures, even if their outward manifestations vary. And so, The Ring is about us all, and it is certainly a work for our time. This is, as I say, an event of huge cultural significance in Australia. It's not that people haven't tried it before. My old opera company, the Australian Opera as it then was, not in my time, I might add, but it had a go in the early 80s and got as far as doing Rheingold and Valkyrie, and then decided it didn't have the wherewithal in various forms to do it and chucked the attempt. Melbourne hoped and tried desperately to do it in the late 80s and early 90s and just couldn't get it all together. But Adelaide has. Just a quick reminder of some of the significant events about how this season has really come about. In cultural terms, the loss of the Grand Prix in December 1993 was the best thing that has ever happened to opera in Australia. Because, I mean, the Grand Prix is a wonderful event in its own right, but it released the funds that made it possible for the Australian Major Events Corporation, which is the remarkable South Australian initiative, to receive a first submission about the ring cycle in June or July of 1994. And in May 1995, the success of that submission was announced when the then Premier Dean Brown announced that the ring cycle would be regarded as a major event for South Australia. And in July 1995, the ring corporation was established under the Minister Diana Laidlaw. This production that you're going to be seeing and hearing from next week only came into life at exactly the same time. It was first performed in Paris at the Théâtre du Châtelet in November 1984. It was acclaimed, admired and criticised. Fairly typical Wagner production in that sense. People loved it, people hated it. But there was absolutely, virtually unanimous applause for the musical leadership of Geoffrey Tate. The production, well, you'll all be able to make your own judgment about the production over the next few weeks. I think that nobody can challenge the description, though, that it is a production of clarity and simplicity. It's a production that focuses on the humanity of the drama. And I believe that it's a production style that really accurately reflects for our time one of the great sources of inspiration to Wagner in creating this cycle, which was ancient Greek drama. And I think that it's a production that will let the work speak to us in a wonderfully direct way. Those who are expecting dragons, toads, fireworks, forget it. They aren't in this production. And I'm not sure that they need to be in any production nowadays. One of the great pluses about attending the ring cycle in our day and age is the existence of surtitles. I'd have to say I think it's one of the pluses about going to any opera is the existence of surtitles. And I'm happy to say the surtitles for this production, which have been specially commissioned, have been sponsored by somebody who's with us today, Diana Ramsey. And the difference that having these surtitles will make to the enjoyment of the audience simply can't be calculated. I first attended a ring cycle in 1970 in London. I went 2 years running to the Covent Garden Ring in 70 and 71. And I was serious in those days, and I used to do my homework, and I read up the story of them. I read the story in great detail in advance, and then each day before each opera I read it all again. Well, if you think you can remember all the details of who's doing what to whom, let alone who's saying what to whom, and then who's telling whom about what they've already done, and keep it in the right sequence, it's really, really hard. And what the surtitles do is simply relieve the audience of all that anxiety of trying to remember where they're up to and just enjoy it for what it is. It will be the surtitle translation has been done by Brian Fitzgerald, who's the most experienced person in the country, and I think it's a wonderful initiative of State Opera that they did commission their own new version of the surtitles, because, frankly, the way we express these things in Australia is different from everybody else. I believe our surtitles here are more literate and more apt to the work than anybody else's in the world. Some statistics about this amazing production. Well, the whole period of rehearsal and performance is 18 weeks. 41 principal singers and covers, of whom 90% are Australian or New Zealand. There's 83 in the chorus, there are 77 actors, there are 128 orchestral musicians who've been involved in 200 hours of rehearsal. There are 40, all of this is meaningless, I sound like Michael Edgley talking about a Russian circus. There are 40 crew members, and there are 10 people from Paris, from the original production. It was shipped from Paris in 10 40-foot. They wouldn't do it feet in French, would they? Whatever. Okay, that's a standard. Thank you. Minister for Transport knows these things. 40-foot shipping containers. And this production has filled this vast stage of the Festival Centre probably for the first time in its history. When I was in the opera business, I bought some big productions here, and these were productions that completely filled the stages in... anybody can fill the stage in Sydney, but they filled the stage in Melbourne or Brisbane, and still there were always gaps at the side. I'm here to tell you, you won't see any gaps at the side of the stage here. The stage is actually bigger than the... Théâtre du Châtelet in Paris, so much so that, as Stephen explained to me, they've actually had to sort of fake up a back wall to replicate the site. It is an astounding sight, and it is wonderfully stylish and really quite inspirational look in that theatre. All of the basement is full of the most amazing hydraulics. I note in the press that people keep on describing it as a minimalist production. Well, I've never seen so much machinery used to mount a minimalist production in my life. But I've always said simplicity costs you more in the theatre than ornateness, and that's an absolute truth. Who's going to this thing? Well, this is, I think, one of the most interesting statistics about it all. Michael Edgley could certainly never trot this out. There are 1,500 people from South Australia going, but there are 3,000 people from interstate going and another 1,000 from overseas. This is the first time in this state's history, and I would venture to say in any state's history, that an arts event has drawn 70% of its audience from outside the state. This was one of the challenges that the Events Corporation people set us in supporting the production, and I must say when... Diana Laidlaw first asked me to come on board as chairman, I thought it was a big ask, actually. But I thought it was an appropriate ask. This is one of the objects for which this event was ordained. And it has utterly delivered on that. 4,000 people from outside the state and 1,000 of them from outside the country will be here, because they can't do anything else but stay here, for a minimum of 7 days. Some of them we know are here for 10 to 14 days because they're doing other things. But that's a lot of people spending a lot of money in this state. And I think that to have so completely delivered on the brief is a terrific credit to the management of State Opera. Before the event, the Centre for Economic Studies at Adelaide University estimated that the economic benefit would range between $10 and $14 million. Now, I know at the press table they've all groaned because they've all heard this sort of thing about economic statistics and multiplier effects and all the rest of it, and you never hear any more about it. Not from us, you won't, because the Centre for Economic Studies have been commissioned to carry out an actual study of the economic effect, which will then measure against those estimates. There has been, and will continue to be, colossal media attention in this to this event. There are 50 visiting journalists from all over the world. From the UK, people have been sent by The Times, The Sunday Observer, The Sunday Telegraph, and The Independent. So that, you know, quite balanced politically. From the US, there's somebody from the LA Times, and from Vanity Fair. There are journalists from France, Holland, Switzerland and Germany, and wonderful coverage from the Eastern print media. I'm sure they will in Western Australia, but I don't know whether they have. And terrific coverage, it will surprise you, on the ABC. Already the 7:30 report has devoted a 9-minute segment to this, which is probably more than they've devoted to South Australia all year, except when you're having trouble with your water, as we have trouble with our water over there. Radio National have created a special documentary which will go to air this Sunday afternoon, and a television documentary is in production right now, which will go to air. Am I allowed to say when it goes to air? I'm looking for a cue. No, nobody's saying I can't. I think it's Tuesday. If Tuesday is the 9th of December, that's when it's going to air. So in our last cycle here, that ABC television documentary... What? 8th, thank you. 8th of December, that is. There's a whole lot of other ancillary events. It's all right, Robert, I'm watching the time. There'll be no way of anybody escaping the ring happily in Adelaide. I'm delighted that the City Council have put up those attractive banners. But among the events that are going on are a series of exhibitions, the Art Gallery of South Australia, the State Library, the Bar Smith Library, the Kensington Gallery and the Adelaide Town Hall. There will be specialist films about Wagner relating to the ring by Fritz Lang and Visconti at Her Majesty's Theatre. There will be an international Wagner symposium to be held at Adelaide University later this month, with an impressive lineup of Wagner scholars from London, Cambridge, Heidelberg and Munich. And two new Wagner-related plays will be presented both at the Elder Hall and at the Independent Theatre. This is, in every sense, a major festival in its own right. Now, just in case you think it's all work and no play, I should remind anybody who doesn't know that the Holden Australian Golf Open will be on from December 3 to 6, and Australia will be playing England in a test match from December 11 to 15, and we end on the 12th. So there's something in this for everyone, and I think that's very happy timing. It's really only happening because of an extraordinary series of partnerships and collaborations. I'm not sure you should use the word collaboration in respect of a German work, but nevertheless, we've just rehabilitated the word and said it's a good word, and this is happening because of fantastic cooperation. The State Opera is an amazing company. I've read it described recently as the smallest of the state companies. It's a vicious lie. It's not the smallest of the state companies. It's the biggest and most successful company after the national company now. Certainly, I'd rather be sitting in Stephen Phillips' chair than sitting in his equivalent in Brisbane, and we won't even talk about Western Australia. And probably, compared with the national company even, it's the most financially stable opera company in the whole country. It was a brave and brilliant undertaking, and it's one that is already wrapped in success. It's happening because State Opera have worked and are working closely and effectively with the Adelaide Symphony Orchestra, their performance partners in this event. This is an astounding event for the Adelaide Symphony Orchestra all by itself, just even putting aside what it is for the opera company and everybody else. For the Adelaide Symphony, it is probably their biggest playing challenge ever. It is a wonderful opportunity for them in that they will, by the end of this season, they will have worked longer with Geoffrey Tate, the conductor of this, than they have worked with any other conductor in the history of the orchestra. That is not to say that they don't work effectively and marvellously with their principal guest conductors at other times of the year, but none of them will have ever been as long with the orchestra than this. And not only with them for a long time, but doing nothing else but working with that conductor. And I believe the benefits of that, particularly, obviously when it's a conductor of Geoffrey's status and ability, the benefits of that will flow on for years for this orchestra. But they have thrown themselves into this with an energy and a vigour, both corporately and as individual musicians, that has been really quite inspirational. And they are a wholly owned subsidiary of the ABC, that has to be mentioned. Among the other hugely important partners are the Ministry for the Arts. Arts South Australia, under the leadership of the Minister, Diana Laidlaw, had the vision, the wit, the nerve to undertake this. It was a sort of high-risk strategy, because this is big money that's being put into the arts in a state that already puts a lot of money into the arts. And it's a big swing around from a Grand Prix to an opera cycle. And that the Minister carried the Cabinet with her, and I'm now happy to be able to say she can look them all in the eye with a fierce pride in this. That's a terrific plus. Arts South Australia, her department is of course led by Tim O'Loughlin, who's not without his past opera connections himself, so he'd declare his interest even if I didn't. He was of course formerly the chairman of State Opera. The Adelaide Festival Centre are our great partners in this. The way in which they have entered into the spirit of this, in the preparations for it, the way in which they will look after the audience will be, I think, a model for other places. People will, I believe, be delighted with what's been done with the auditorium. They received special capital funds as part of a stage process of the upgrade of the centre, and the first money has been spent on the festival theatre itself. And if you haven't been in there since it was done, you'll see a gorgeous new timber floor. You'll sit in marvellously new, comfortable seats, and I believe you will hear in the performance a quality of sound that you've never heard before. Tourism South Australia have been our great partners in this, as have been the City Council and the Commonwealth Government through the Department of Communication and the Arts. The idea began with the Artistic Director, Bill Gillespie, and it has been carried forward under the management of Stephen Phillips. I actually know a bit about opera management, and I know what a fraught business it is, but I've never done a ring cycle. And I can say to you, in all honesty, that I'm in absolute awe of the way in which Steve has handled this, the calmness, the focus, and the patience and tact that he's brought to bear on this is again a model for the whole country in arts administration. Colin Dunsford isn't always the auditor of the South Australian Press Club. He is also... Where are you, Colin? There we are, yeah. He's hiding, yes. He's also the chairman of the Finance Committee of the Ring Corporation, but most importantly, he's the chairman of State Opera. And I believe that Colin and the whole of the board should be very proud of what's happening right now. And I believe that they are also going to be the happy harvesters of the success of this venture. I believe its benefits to the company will be immense, not least because some of the opera-going public of South Australia will be so pleased that they're going back to a conventional season next year with all those lovely hit shows that are being done. But the maturity that is being brought to bear within the company by this undertaking will be a benefit forever. You all know, I don't need to tell you, that Adelaide is the perfect city for this sort of festival. Therefore, it is the perfect city for the Ring. You have the only theatre in the country where that can accommodate it without changes to the pit. One of the reasons why I think it founded in Melbourne was the amount of money that was going to be needed to increase the size of the orchestra pit there. this is the only place where it could be done without changes to the theatre, but more particularly, this is the city with the history of festivals. This is the festival city in Australia. It's been a matter of some irritation to me as one who isn't a resident here, but who has, I suppose, over 30 years been involved in bringing an enormous number of artists to Australia in the chamber music area, in the theatre, in the festival area and in opera, enormous number of artists to Australia who then, as part of their visit to Australia, appeared at the Adelaide Festival. I would be responsible for the rest of their tour around the country, but they'd appear here at the Adelaide Festival. And they were clearly, because they were festival stars, were always top draw people, so they generally had hugely successful appearances in every other city. But over the years later then, when I would go to a concert in some other place by any of these people or be sent some of their publicity material, I would read about their appearances at Salzburg and Edinburgh and in Paris and New York, and that they had appeared at the Adelaide Festival. Never has one of these blasted artists said that they toured Australia for Music Aviva or the Australian Opera or whoever. All that was ever written about it was that they appeared at the Adelaide Festival. Now, the point I'm making about this is that in international artistic terms, saying that you've appeared at the Adelaide Festival means something. It is terrific shorthand to any artist that they are on the international circuit. It's no use mentioning the fact that they've toured the rest of Australia. The shorthand is that they appeared at the Adelaide Festival. What is opening next week is a great event that will underscore that already fantastically enviable reputation of Adelaide as the festival city in Australia. Let me give the last words about this ring cycle to Peter Bassett again, to whom I am indebted, and so will everybody who reads the book. These are the last words in his book. As we look back over the war-torn 20th century and forward to a new millennium in which all things seem possible, we shall have good reason to be amazed by the ring, the fruit of one man's intellect and a most singular work of art. Congratulations to Adelaide on having the wit and energy and guts to do it.
Deserve a sit down in a nice comfortable armchair after that, I think. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for questions. We traditionally have given priority to working media members and then afterwards to others if they wish to do so. Before I invite the first questions, I should simply say that in my introduction, Diane Laidlaw has reminded me I didn't acknowledge the presence of Ian Evans, the Minister, the South Australian Minister for Trade and Industry, and I do so now. Thank you for coming, Minister. Have we got any media questions? Mr. McDonald.
Right. Frederick Tobin, Adelaide Institute. Mr. McDonald, or Don, what...
I'm sorry, would you just speak up a little bit? We didn't get that.
Frederick Tobin, Adelaide Institute. Don, what are you going to do about Philip Adams? Is there a chance of you imbuing him with some kind of intellectual honesty which would enable him to embrace the Wagnerian ethos?
We did audition him for the Ring Cycle, and his present employers wouldn't release him. Philip, I think, represents a particular stream of Australian consciousness. I think he appropriately reflects an aspect of political thought and of of cultural aspiration in Australia. But he's one segment of that, and he wouldn't pretend to be anything other than an aspect of Australian thought and life. A program like Philip's isn't meant to be balanced. It's the job of the ABC to balance the rest of the schedule.
Cherie Tyrrell, ABC Radio News, and surprisingly I have an ABC question. In October you said you would be speaking to Senator Alston further with regard to the financing of the digitalisation of the ABC. I wondered how progress was going on those discussions.
Progress with the witch? I'm sorry, you weren't very clear for somebody on ABC Radio.
Sorry, in October you said you'd be having further discussions with Senator Alston with regard to the financing of the digitalisation of the ABC.
Yes. Well, everyone at the ABC will have shared our pleasure with the government's announcement of its intention to fund the whole of the net cost of the first phase of our digital conversion. And anybody in the room else interested in digital television? I mean, I'll take 2 minutes to actually explain to you what we're talking about. I'm sure you all know that in 2001, digital television broadcasting will be introduced in Australia, which will mean that, among other things, that you will be able to receive high-definition television, that's as long as you buy a new set, and we will be able to broadcast then much better picture quality, much better sound quality. That's the high definition part of it. The other really important thing, and I think in some respects this is even more important to us, the use of the digital spectrum, and we have a full allocation of digital spectrum, will mean that in certain times in the schedule we will have the ability to multi-channel. In other words, send out several lots of programs at the same time. Now, just in case you thought that 34 channels wasn't already enough, we and everybody else, not everybody else, some of us will be adding to this. One of the distinctions is that the government has indicated that the free-to-air commercial networks will not be entitled to multi-channel, but that the public broadcasters, that's to say SBS and the ABC, will be able to multi-channel. We will be having to put forward to the government proposals as to the uses to which we will want to put those channels, and they will then consider those in the light of our proposals. What is particularly exciting to us, I believe, is that we will be able to use that multi-channel capacity for a much more effective regional television broadcasting. At the moment, the schedule is absolutely jammed. The ABC is full of television ideas, but it's like a narrow pipeline. There's all sorts of people with all sorts of ideas and programs that they could and would make, but the schedule is limited by time. There are only 24 hours in the day, and more particularly, there are only about 6 hours of peak viewing. And that means that we are not able to do all the things we want to do, and we're not always able to meet the particular regional and sectional interests. You didn't think it was going to be such a long answer, but it really is to put a context to the question. I believe that the job we're going to be able to do when we have that multi-channelling capacity will make the ABC more useful to the people of Australia in television terms than it has been hitherto. In a crude sort of analogy, it would be like saying that we'll be able to be on television what we are now on radio. As you know, on radio you can choose to listen to Radio National, Classic FM, originating as it does from Adelaide, your metropolitan station, or if you live upstate, your local regional station, Triple J, the Parliamentary News Radio Network. You have those choice of radio channels, if you like. What multi-channelling will permit us in television is to provide a similar sort of service at different times of the day. Now, this is a very expensive business, and the capital investment in it will be nearly $200 million by the time we're finished. We, in our submission to government, spoke of it in two phases. Phase one was about the investment required to bring into the ABC this sort of digital equipment to be able to make digital programs. The second phase is the costs of the equipment to broadcast digitally, in other words, to then put the programs out. It's a slightly false distinction between phase one and phase two. The answer to your question is that the government has now agreed, the week before last, to fund the full net cost of phase one. They are now waiting on us to present our detailed plans about phase two, and I have no doubt that they will fund it.
Given your comments on the 7:30 report and the 9 minutes we've had in South Australia, does this mean you'll be championing the return of the local 7:30 report?
A local 7:30 report? What would you want a local 7:30 report for? Another question. Christopher Pearson. They're coming with the microphone so that other people can hear you.
We'll take one from over here first.
Oh, right.
I have the microphone.
Oh, yes. Libby Grigg. She works. So this might be a Dorothy Dixer.
I have a question both that goes to the ABC and to the Media Alliance. When do you think that you might be able to get together with the Alliance to work out a way where Australians can hear Australian artists performing operas? It's much, much cheaper, in fact, to broadcast a complete season from the Metropolitan Opera in New York on ABC Classic FM than it is to broadcast any Australian artist singing Australian opera, and that includes The Ring. It's hugely expensive, and it, in many ways, is to do with the relationship between the ABC, I think, and the Alliance.
Well, as someone whose job it was to get the Australian opera, as it then was, onto radio and television as often as I could, I have great sympathy with the people who have yet to resolve that difficulty. It is, to be boring about it, a matter of cost, but I believe that the cost factors will gradually come into some sort of reasonable control as enterprise agreements of the right sort continue to be made. What I'm getting at in this is that hitherto it has been necessary to pay not just the artists but the stagehands and everybody else involved in a performance with a broadcast loading, a broadcast fee, if the performance was being broadcast. And it wasn't just a loading, actually, it was more than their actual night's fee. It was a big chunk of money. Now, even before I'd left the opera company, we had negotiated agreement with the orchestra, whereby the orchestra would include a number of broadcasts as part of their annual salaries. And I believe that will be happening with singers and with other people. Then the matter of broadcasting becomes not a very big financial decision for the opera company or for the broadcaster. And I think it would be wonderful if more performances were heard over the radio and perhaps some more seen on television. However, I have to say too that I think it's wonderful that the public of Australia can hear the Metropolitan Opera broadcast. I think that none of us want to have a situation where we have no comparative reference points for our performances. To be able to hear the sort of casts that the Metropolitan can almost nightly schedule, the sort of casts that I and Stephen could only ever dream about putting on in this country, is one of the great pluses about that. You might think that with so many opera recordings already in the world, why does anybody actually need to hear a broadcast from an opera house? Well, I think for the same reasons that you need to go to the theatre. There is nothing matches the excitement of the live performance, and therefore there is a thrill and an excitement about hearing a live, uncut and unedited and untitivated performance from an opera house that gives you a different performance from the Studio Perfect CD. So I'm glad we've got the Met performances, but I would agree, Libby, it would be wonderful if there were more Australian ones.
Donald, it's been reported that stage two of the digitalisation is going to be partly funded from the sale of surplus to requirements ABC properties. And I must say, it's always seemed to me that there's an element of truth in the proposition that, that sometimes the ABC has had almost more property than hookers. That
we are not hookers. Oh, LJ hookers.
Yes, LJ, yes. I think most people in media understand that you don't need to own a printing press in order to hire one. You don't need to own a building in order to occupy it. Do you have a sense of how much money is likely to be raised from these sales of assets and over how long a time?
Yeah. The ABC does hold a lot of property. About half of what we use is leased and about the other half is owned. And it's true that in lots of businesses in Australia in recent years, people have been looking at what they need to own as opposed to what they might lease from other people. But in our property re-evaluation, and it's nationwide, we're looking at virtually every property we own. In many cases, we are better to stick with the with what we own than to lease. But in some places, we will be changing properties that we own for properties that we will also own, but will be more suitable for our circumstance. We have, for instance, in Melbourne, a marvellous, and this is a couple of years, 3 years old now, a marvellous new centre in South Bank, just near the art gallery and the arts centre and all the rest of it, part of that precinct there in Adelaide, and therefore the old broadcast house in Lonsdale Street was clearly surplus to requirements. We've just sold that in a very advantageous arrangement with the Government of Victoria, who want to build some county courts on that site. So I'm simply mentioning that sometimes we will be selling a property, but to replace it with another purchased property, but where we will then have a modern purpose-built facility. But in other places, we will lease from other people. The sort of buildings that are needed for broadcasting now are not quite as exotic as they used to be. Coming back to digitalisation, that the sort of equipment that is required now means that the broadcast spaces, the studios, don't have to be as vast, don't have to be, frankly, quite as special as they used to be. And so that's making life easier. You can, for instance, I mean, SBS headquarters in Sydney is a perfectly conventional-looking office block. And so a broadcaster can work out of some places that aren't as exotic as they used to be. We have estimated that out of the $200 million that we will be spending on the digital conversion, about 40-something million will come from our property rationalisation. But it will be done in a way that makes us a more effective broadcaster and not a less effective one.
Thank you for accepting my government's invitation to chair the Ring Cycle Corporation. I think we've all been particularly rewarded by having you come so regularly to Adelaide, but for your contribution to the Opera Company and this project in particular. So publicly, I wish to thank you. Secondly, I am interested in not just the capital costs of the digital network for the ABC. I'm actually interested in how you're going to get the money and how you're going to fund the programming on all these channels that you say you're going wish to broadcast on future. I would hope very much that we're just not going to see on those channels imported American culture, and that we're going to see a real investment in Australian culture. Now, how do you plan to do that? How do you plan to do that?
Okay. The Minister has put her finger on the thing that matters most in all of this, and that's content. I mean, the equipment matters, but it matters about as much as your laptop computer or your telephone does. I mean, the actual telephone handset is about the least interesting thing in the world. It's the content that goes through your telephone that matters. And But the two things actually benefit each other. Let me take the example of our Collinswood establishment here in Adelaide. This is not one of the properties that we'll be selling, partly because nobody thought there'd be a buyer for such an attractive building. You may not think it's beautiful, but in a few years' time it'll have a National Heritage Order on it, I'm sure. We looked at selling it and moving to town, and that didn't make sense. So we are spending a lot of money in upgrading that building. We're among other things, we're being helped, I have to say, by the Government of South Australia, which has taken a long-term lease on several of the top floors, which is one of the things that's really made our staying there viable, and some cash assistance in it. But we are moving administrative positions from Sydney to Adelaide. 100, not just all administrative, some program-making positions. 100 positions are being moved, mostly from Sydney. They're not all from Sydney, but mostly from Sydney to Adelaide. And the first 24 of those people, first 24 of those positions, began operating out of Adelaide just this month. They've been filled actually mostly by Adelaide residents, which I'm also very pleased about. So more people will be working here than before. But the real story about what we're doing at Collinswood are the new studios that are being created there. And in particular, in December, we will be opening our new co-located news studios there. It's 2:05, I've got to finish at 2. You've got to draw a raffle ticket and everything. But co-location is again one of the things that's being made more effective by digital technology. What it means in layman's terms is that we'll have the one news and current affairs set up for radio, television and online. They will be all in the one place. It'll be the most dynamic newsroom in the country, and it'll be the model for how we will do it in Melbourne and then ultimately in Sydney. Now, this is being done to free up more money for better and wider coverage. In other words, it isn't about having fewer journalists, it's about having people being freed up to do their work more effectively, to be able to concentrate on certain stories and pursue them. A tiny example of what digital technology is doing to make programming cheaper so that there will be more programs to fill all of these spaces that the Minister has asked about. Just a few weeks ago, Four Corners had a most marvellous program about Agape, the town that was, or the place that was devastated by the tsunami in Papua New Guinea. It was not just beautifully made, but it was dramatically and in current affairs terms hugely interesting, because we actually saw the people there of that tribe making the decision about where they were going to live, whether they would live inland or whether they would go back to their strip of land between the sea and the lagoon. And they, as you probably know, decided to go back to that place because they are water people. That program, as effective and beautiful as it was made by one person. One person, a journalist, who was also carrying the camera and recording the sound. Now, that isn't going to work for all sorts of television. Nobody is saying that we want all of these multi-channeled capability to be filled up with things that look like Race Around the World, fun that it is. But what we're saying is that really skillful and experienced people like that television journalist can make a program carrying the camera themselves. So for certain sorts of programs, that's going to work, and that means that the schedule, expanded schedules with the multi-channel capability, will mean that people from all over the country, the first of our regionally made, and I mean regional, I don't mean a capital city, I mean from the Kimberleys, from our our office in Broome. The first of a regionally made television program will go to air in Western Australia within a few months, again made with the same technology. So more programming is being made with the people we have because we'll be marrying their skills with the new equipment.
Albert Bensheim.
We might just have, I think, Sue, just for your benefit, two more questions, if we may. One here, and I think we've got one over here too, so we'll make those the last two, if we may.
These might be opera questions with any luck.
Albert Bensheim, I'm the president of the Retail Traders Association, and I would just like to say that on our preliminary figures, we believe that the average person who will come to the ring cycle will spend approximately $5,000, and we're all very, very excited and very positive. So mine's not really a question, but probably a statement. And a thank you to the opera.
Thank you.
Do you remember the ring? As Anna Russell said, do you remember the ring? As I thought that the main purpose of your being here today was to talk about your position as chairman of the Ring Corporation. I'm Elizabeth Salisbury. I write for the Adelaide Advertiser for Opera in Sydney and for Opera London. You might remember I think it was May 1995, we were at a National Council meeting together when this momentous announcement was made that Adelaide was going to have a ring. You were then general manager of the Australian Opera. And do you remember saying, this is wonderful news, because it's let all the other opera companies in Australia off the hook? Do you remember saying that?
I do.
And you meant it. I know. You were absolutely sincere. And at that time, there were moves from the Australian Opera and moves from the Victorian State Opera and so on. It's a wonderful thing that Adelaide's got this ring. I wonder if you would be prepared to promise that we will never, ever, in my lifetime or yours, have another.
Let's have this one and enjoy this one first, Elizabeth.
I'm not quite sure there's a question that required an answer or not. I certainly couldn't hear it all myself. Sue, do you want to go now? You want me to? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I think that probably those of you who are not opera associated have now got a better feeling for what we're in for here in Adelaide. In fact, when I was catching a cab to come over here, I drove through the parklands and I said to the taxi driver, you know, here's the horsey thing, that should be pretty good for Adelaide. I said, I'm going off to lunch with the chairman of the Ring Cycle Corporation. He said, the Ring Cycle, what's that? He said, is that something to do with riding a bicycle for too long? So I think we've got a bit of an education job to do, but I think once we've done it, I think Adelaide will appreciate what a large event this is, probably, I guess. Donald Adler, you'd agree, the biggest thing since the Grand Prix. It is very good, Donald MacDonald, to have a speaker at this press club who has wisdom, style and wit, and you certainly have that. I'd like to thank you very much for that, for coming along, for handling the whole matter with such grace, and giving us the briefing that you've given. You've obviously got tremendous enthusiasm for the event, as have, I think, most of us, and let's look forward to it. Reminder that our next luncheon is December the 8th. December the 8th is going to be a big day because you can come to lunch with Greg Chappell and have sport, and you can go home and watch ABC TV. Isn't that right? I would also remind you that we need to get guest speakers of this calibre to keep this club going. Your committee does a great job in putting them together. We'd like all of you to raise your hand and say, someone's coming to town, let's get them up to speak to the club. We have set ourselves the goal of being the best luncheon club in town, and we want to have speakers who create news. I'm sorry, Donald, there's no federal election in place at the moment. I'd like to thank you again for your time and for your grace, and we'd like to present you with the traditional gift of this club. I'm also glad to see that you're a red wine enthusiast, as indeed I am. We've always given our guest speakers a small gift. Well, a medium-sized gift. It's not as big as the ring, but here it is. Would you come and accept it? Uh-huh. The Magnum is from our sponsor, Orlando. It's 1993 St Hugo Kinawa Cabernet. A wine thoroughly worth keeping if you can for a couple of years. In fact, I think I might open it on the eve of the Sydney Olympics. We have tried to lift our act with wines in this club because, to paraphrase the old Groucho Marx gag, I'm not going to belong to any club that doesn't serve decent booze. Here's Sue Fraser.
Do we have all the raffle tickets in? If we haven't, just yell out. I'd like to invite up a journalist who's synonymous with the arts, my good friend Samela Harris. Where is she? Come on up. Come and draw the raffle, Samela. I might just say, while Samela is coming up here, that we live one suburb away from each other and we talk on the internet in the wee hours of the morning, and my partner says to me, why don't you just pick up the bloody phone? She's taught me everything I know about the internet. Sa, are you going to draw the raffle?
Okay.
There you go, kiddo.
Right.
Four.
Choppers.
Hey. For two tickets, two A reserve tickets to De Fledermaus. What do you know about De Fledermaus? What do you know? Anything?
It's an opera.
It's an opera.
Mozart.
Okay, it's a choice of three nights in the May season. Thank you to the State Opera of South Australia. Who have we got? D74. Yellow, D74. Here we go. D74 yellow? Yep, that one? Yellow? Bright yellow. Bright yellow. That one there. Okay. We've got a $50 voucher from the Rock Lobster Cafe in Gouger Street, which specialises in that lovely southern rock lobster. H34, which is yellow. Sylvia. Bark? Back? Sylvia, yellow, H34. Wonderful. Yes?
And one more.
Okay, a $50 voucher from Ragoni's Bistro on Lee Street with that wonderful Italian. H74, and it's...
Renee Leith.
Here she is. And, Sarah, we have a Telstra gold pen and pencil set, which is really nice.
Oh, look, it's so perfect.
So perfect. Tim O'Loughlin, D75, an orange ticket. Hey? Yes, that's you. That's you. There you go. Yeah. Okay. Three bottles of wine, courtesy of the Press Club. And we have G58. Now, this is a...
Is it white or grey?
It's a white or a grey ticket. G58. Up the back. Here we go. Down this, you can pick them up. No. Okay, for a carton of Southwark Old Stout from SA Brewing.
Ewart Shaw.
Ewart Shaw. H9, yellow. Okay. In the wrong colour. Ewart Shaw?
Okay.
Okay, and we have a carton of Southwark Old Stout from SA Brewing, another carton, H42, and it's yellow, H42. H42, and it's yellow. Okay. And Sarah, we have one more that's not on the list. Okay, one more that's not on the list, because Southwark have been generous, SA Brewing. We've got a carton of Southwark Premium for D68, which is yellow. D68. Who's got it? D68. Please thank Samala Harris from the Advertiser. Also, a reminder, could you put in your diary a reminder that the next Press Club luncheon is on Tuesday, December the 8th. Oh, they're rowdy over there. Tuesday, December the 8th, here at the Hindley Park Royal, and it's with the coach of the SA Redbacks, Greg Chappell. Thank you for your attendance today.